Your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody once again, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Tonight we're going to be talking about Ozark folk magic with my guest, author Brandon Weston. Now, Brandon's a spiritual healer, a native plant herbalist, a folklorist, and writer, who lives in the beautiful Arkansas Ozarks. He's an Ozarker through and through, and because it's the land he was born, the land where his parents and grandparents were born, as well as many more generations before that. Now, I've done several shows on different types of folk magic here and there. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about American Brujeria. We've also talked about Appalachian Conjure, Old Style Conjure, Backwoods Witchcraft, to name a few. And while they're all diverse in some aspects, they all are practices that go back generation after generation. While all folks were healers and practitioners, no matter how different their practices are from the others, they have one thing in common. It isn't a religion or a hobby. It's a lifestyle. So Brandon is here to talk about his book, Ozark Folk Healing, and we'll gladly answer any questions that you might have, but only if you're in the Para-X chat room. And you can be if you come over and join us at paraxradionetwork.com. So Brandon, welcome to Stirring the Cauldron.
All right, thank you for having me.
It was one of those books, and I'm going to, right off the bat, I'm going to warn everybody that this is going to be one of those shows that I need 2 hours long because there's so much that I want to cover, and we're not going to be able to. So we'll be probably jumping around topics that really caught my eye and piqued my curiosity. So I think we need to get started. All right. So part one of the book, which is the first 7 chapters, talks about mountain heritage, healing tradition, basics of Ozark healing, and some specific healing methods. And then part two deals with plants for healing, animal tools, and all that kind of stuff. So some of the folk terms you use include yarb doctor and power doctor, granny woman and goomer doctor. That's my favorite, the goomer. And those are titles that all come from within the old Ozark folk healing tradition. And there are some specialists also, like wart charmers and thrash blowers and blood stoppers, to name a few. A patient might not know which type of doctor to see. So is it kind of like Western medicine when you go to your primary physician who then might send you off to a specialist, or how does it work?
Yeah, you know, traditionally that's kind of how things happened. So, you know, before we get started with some of the talk, you know, there's a separation between the old Ozarks and the modern Ozarks. And so traditionally in the old Ozarks, there would be generalist healers, specialized healers, and you might just have a problem. You know, maybe the problem is something immediate and serious. You know, I cut off my finger with an axe, or, you know, something like that, or a fever, or, you know, some stomach problem, something like that. And you would kind of know the person in the community to go to. It was somebody that, you know, worked with plants. Maybe they knew things, which is kind of a euphemism for someone with magical power or the gift. And so you generally what would happen is if you had a physical ailment, you went to a physical doctor. So you went to somebody who worked with plants, who worked with remedies. Amongst the physical remedies, we also have prayers. So the famous blood stopping verse in the Bible, which, you know, blood stoppers have used to help with cuts and wounds, things like that. Now, you know, if it was a physical illness, the physical medicine would help. When the illness persists or when the problem gets worse, then the physical doctor might, you know, send you to somebody that does magical things or knows how to, you know, use certain divination methods to find out exactly what is happening underneath the surface. In the modern world, all of these positions have sort of rolled into each other. And so in a lot of cases, one healer might have both the physical remedies as well as the spiritual or magical remedies as well.
Well-rounded.
So there's not necessarily that. Yeah, so there's not necessarily that separation much anymore, like there was in the old Ozarks. But there were generalists in the old Ozarks, too. Granny women were such an important part of the community because typically they had both the physical remedies, so they knew all about the plants. They knew how to sew up a cut, and, or, you know, they could take a bullet out of a wound, things like that. But then they also, they had the vital prayers, the verbal charms, the rituals. So as a figure in the community, they were the generalist of the generalists, really.
Kind of like the wise women, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And in the Ozarks, the granny women are such an important figure because there was a taboo surrounding men working on women. And so for a very long time, you know, women were just kind of left out in the cold as far as healing went. So they had to heal themselves, or they had to turn to usually older women who had been around. They had survived in the mountains. They had, you know, picked up all this knowledge through their years. And in a lot of cases, the granny women started off as midwives. Most of the time, because they had, you know, many children themselves. So, the granny woman was such an important figure in the community. And in a lot of cases, you know, I've studied under modern granny women, and it's still one of those positions in the community that is much beloved.
Mm-hmm. And much needed, as you said. So,
Absolutely.
So which type of doctor are you?
Well, I guess I consider myself more on the spiritual side. So I kind of align with the power doctor. I use a lot of prayers and verbal charms. I make amulets, things like that. I like to think of myself as providing that sort of that other half of the healing process. So when clients come to me, I always ask them first, well, have you seen a regular doctor? Have you gone to therapy a little bit, or, you know, things like that? and then, you know, if they want to seek out, you know, what I do to provide that spiritual side of the healing process or that magical side, then I'm happy to provide. I work a lot with plants too. Herbalism is not really my strong suit, but what has always really fascinated me and sort of where I found myself fit in was all of the weird stuff. So all of the you know, hidden practices, the secret rituals, things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, traveling around the area collecting information, that was the stuff. If I could find somebody to tell me, you know, one of those rituals, that was gold to me. And still is. I think that part of Ozark folk healing has been so underrepresented. We've had people talk about plant cures, home remedies, you know, healing with food and, you know, folk diets and things like that. But, you know, not a lot of people are talking about Ozark spiritual practices, magical practices. And so that was really one of the points behind the book. One thing that I really wanted to emphasize was that there are all these other practices that sort of complete that healing process. They work on, mm-hmm. you know, the mind. They work on yeah. the spirit, where these other medicines work on the body. They work mm-hmm. to help heal that, too.
Yeah, and that makes good sense because, you know, people that get physically ill can either make themselves better or worse mentally, you Absolutely. Know, if they're fear, if they're, you know, not tolerant to pain or something like that. And the spiritual aspect goes in there, too. Having faith helps, you yeah. know, a physical thing. So, yeah, I mean, the three things are, it's like the trilogy, the great trilogy. There's three different types of illness, and it all joins in. Whether you have one, you have the other two, kind of, no matter if you're trying to or not. But you were Absolutely. Just talking about being apprenticed by the elders, but in the book, you were talking about apprenticing in the other world, and that heading caught my eye. So can you explain that, please?
Yeah, so that's one of those weird areas that I love talking about, but you know, I always have to kind of judge the crowd that I'm talking to. Am I at a museum where maybe the weird stuff isn't what they want to hear? But that's really one of those areas that I personally, on a personal level, have connected to. Apprenticing in the other world is connecting to the spirits of nature, connecting to the ancestors, connecting to the little people, which are the Ozark word for the fairies. Which is this blended tradition from Europe and indigenous peoples into this sort of amalgam of these animistic spirits. And so healers in the past have been very reluctant to share practices like that, practices that deal with the other world and the spirits, because at one point it was, you know, associated with witchcraft, and witchcraft was always associated with evil. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I've found that healers who do connect in this way, connect to that sort of magical landscape around us, they are, you know, more likely to talk about it. They're more likely to be excited about it if somebody's excited with them. Personally, a lot of the work that I do is connecting to that other world. So connecting to the spirits of the land, not just in a sort of honorific way, but interacting with the spirits of the land and the ancestors as collaborators, mm-hmm. as entities that can help, that can bring in cures that maybe I, you know, haven't even thought of. So working in that way, I think, is a very good way of pinpointing exactly what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, you know, when I'm working with a client, you know, they're bringing in all of their stuff, but I'm bringing in a whole lot of my stuff too. And so working with spirit guides, with guardians, with my own ancestors and the spirits I've encountered on the land, they are very to the point. They mm-hmm. are very good about cutting through all of that and say, no, this is all distractions. You need to go in this direction, or mm-hmm. bringing in, you know, a ritual that maybe I hadn't even thought of before. A lot of the rituals that I use, you know, maybe not on a daily basis, but certainly pretty often, they were inspired by these moments, these encounters with the spirits. And, you know, they were rituals that I may have never discovered on my own, but there's this wealth of knowledge hidden in the landscape itself that, you know, you just have to go out there and have ears to listen and eyes to see it.
Yep, and my listeners, I would guess a great majority are talking to spirit guides and talking to people on the other side and believing in the elementals and the fae and everything. I mean, you know, I've got great listeners. So, you know, you're talking to people that are appreciating hearing about that, just so you want
Good.
To know. Yeah, yeah. All right, so
yeah, that's been a huge area of Ozark folk belief and spirituality that really has been hidden, and it's been hidden for good reason. Just because, you know, traditionally rural culture around here has been so conservative that, you know, if you have this sort of alignment to the spirit world, you might disguise it behind being pious. So people would talk to spirits, but they would say they were talking to angels. And that was, of course, completely okay with the community. But the type of angels that they might describe would be maybe a little bit different than I think most people's connotation of angels. But so people have kind of had to hide behind, you know, hide their language, hide their practices behind these sort of veils. And so that's one of those areas that's been very exciting for me to sort of dig into and really be proud to bring out these stories and to help other people be proud of them as well. To say, you know, we can talk about the spirits of our dead and leaving out food for the fairies on Christmas Eve and not cutting down old trees in the field and protecting springs and all of this stuff that Ozarkers have been doing for so long. But now we can talk about them and we can help, you know, repair the patches on that tapestry of our culture.
Exactly. And that's what makes it also wonderful. I mean, you know, back in the day, witches had to use code names and words too. I mean, you know, if you hear Shakespeare's Eye of Newt and Toe of Dog, those are plants, you know. I mean, I don't remember exactly which right now, but they're plants. They were just code names. So this has been going on for a very, very long time. And it's good that people are opening up a little bit. And you know, I mean, there's a difference between spirituality and religion. I think they're two different things. And so, you know, to be spiritual, I think, is so much more important in a sense, because that's coming from inside you and the nature around you, and there's no dogma there. There's nothing wrong with religion. Please don't give me any letters. I'm not against it at all. But, you know, it's just this spirituality. There are a lot of religious people who are very spiritual.
Right.
So, you know, Absolutely. It goes back and forth. But it's really nice when people can talk about, you know, getting messages from the elementals or, you know, the guardian spirits and all that. It's really nice that we can talk about it these days, whereas maybe, 20 years ago, not so much. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely exciting, especially, you know, my generation. I'm in the millennials, and it seems like, you know, even millennials and the rural Ozarks were all very excited about these things. You know, people are reconnecting to their heritage, their folk ways and things like that. And so I think that, at least from personal experience, I've seen that my excitement is bringing it out of my family. So my older family that may not, you know, want to talk about things as much, my excitement about the culture is bringing that excitement out of them as well. So it's contagious, and I like to see that. Hello.
We're talking metaphysical, so we just did. So did did you hear my question? Now I've got a leaf blower in my ear. But
that's okay. No.
No, it's not okay. I can't hear you. Let me put on thing. But did you hear me? I was asking if your work is a living tradition. You know, one that Ozark healers have been doing for hundreds of years, but there are many different cultures and different traditions represented in the Ozark folkways. So what are some of those common things, and as different as they may be, too, do they all have a really kind of common denominator?
Yeah, I like to think about, you know, it's an evolving culture, and it kind of has always been that way, you know. So Ozark people come from mostly from the Appalachians, and from and before that mostly Scots, Irish, and German, and also we have a bunch of Cornish, we have Welsh, we have French, we have Spanish, we have, you know, all of these little pieces, as well as, you know, the indigenous influence and the African influence to the culture as well. And so I like to think of it as an evolving tradition. Every time we come across a new practice, we test it for ourselves. As one healer told me, you know, if it works, it works. And so healers, especially today, tend to be very eclectic. So I've met healers that incorporate in Reiki, incorporate in Chinese traditional medicine, acupuncture, cupping, and that's kind of always been around. So in the old days, you know, you had healers working with native plants. Well, how did they figure out how to use those native plants? It was through interactions with people that, you know, had been on this land for thousands of years and knew about the plants. So the practice has always been sort of evolving and changing and bringing in new pieces and parts that work and throwing away pieces that don't. But what I have found is that there is this heart, there's this core to the practice, and that is really in the connection between the individual and the land. The land is very important to Ozark folk healing and magic. You know, it provides us our medicine, but it also provides us with those otherworldly encounters to show us things that, you know, we missed. So that is really a core part of this foundation, that individual's connection to not just the physical landscape, but the, you know, the spiritual landscape, the what's behind the veil in the landscape. Mm-hmm. So maintaining that balance with the landscape is extremely important, and I think that influences a lot of practices. So there's this idea that has persisted throughout Ozark traditional healing that, you know, if you heal, you have to give back in some way. So there's always a sacrifice required for healing. And so traditional healers, even if they're, you know, reciting a verbal charm or something for a fever privately, they might, you know, go out and water some plants, or they may give something to the land, or they may give something to their ancestors, or even just we see through just the spiritual development of the individual. So by healing people, you have to recharge your batteries, you know, so to speak. And so, you know, that's why a lot of healers have been very pious, very spiritual people, because that is a way for them to connect to their own path, to their own gift, as they are giving away some of that power to others.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you have collected a lot of stories in the book, but you wish that you could have collected more from family before they passed on. And you said right. Sometimes it kind of haunts you that you could have learned so much more from them. And lately I've been doing a lot of thinking along those lines too, and sometimes want to kick myself for not asking questions that are not having any available answers, because everyone with the answers has already gone. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that we do, is not to realize until it's too late, whether it be magical or even mundane lives in our elders and ancestors. But so when you were a kid, were you just not interested in healing and the like? And when did you kind of decide to start practicing and taking it seriously?
Well, oddly enough, I was a weird kid that was interested in all of this stuff. Yeah. I didn't know how to connect it to my family. And so I was experiencing Ozark culture just as day-to-day life. I didn't know that it was, you know, any different from anybody else's life. I was a kid that, you know, spent most of my summers out in the woods. My parents still live out by the lake, and I go out there and sit on the land and everything, and it's great. But I was a kid that, you know, would gather wild plants, and of course I didn't really know what they did at the time, but I would make potions and all these brews and things like that. And so I really did have this sort of connection, although I couldn't really explain it. But really, it turned into something interesting for me in college, and that, because that's when I took a folklore class and read Vance Randolph, who's, you know, probably the most famous Ozark folklorist. Mm-hmm. And so when I read his book, every time, it seemed like every page, I would find something that he collected in the 40s that was a part of my family. You know, stories about, like, the hoop snake, which is the sort of fantastical Ozark creature, and just different stories and things. I had a great uncle who was a wart charmer. He could buy warts off of people, and he would give you a penny or a dime for them, and they'd disappear off your skin. And Vance Randolph talks about those. He talks about wart charmers. He talks about wart buyers. So it was this moment. I remember sitting in the library reading this book and just having this sort of knot in my stomach, because I realized that there was something here. There was something underneath all of this, and I had to figure out what it was. So by then, I was interested in herbalism. I was interested in, you know, Eastern medicine. I was interested in metaphysical practices, witchcraft, things like that. And so I wanted to really rediscover my own family traditions, but then I really wanted to see the state of the Ozarks today. I really wanted to know if these practices had died, if they were still around, are there still healers out there? Mm-hmm. And what I found was more amazing than I could really have ever expected, but it wasn't really what I thought it would be. I thought I was going to go out and find healers that were working exactly as Vance Randolph had described in 1940. Mm-hmm. And that isn't what I found. What I found was living modern healers that were amazing people, but working in such a variety of ways that, you know, harkened back to our roots, our Ozark tradition, used a lot of practices from that deep foundation in the earth, mm-hmm. but heightened everything, brought in new things, amazing things, and also a lot of connection to the spirit world and being spirit led. So that was, you know, bringing out practices in people that I don't think Vance Randolph could have ever expected.
No.
So it really was such an experience for me. It was such a validating experience as an Ozarker to sort of be able to remove myself from that hillbilly stereotype, mm-hmm. and to show that the culture here is deep, it's profound, it's spiritual, it's magical, and it keeps growing and evolving. It's never stopped, even though, you know, the writers stopped recording it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, people always say everything old is new again, but when you mix the old and the new, it's its own practice. You know, nothing is old, nothing is new, but I think a lot of people do go back to the ancestors and the good ways, the old ways, but can still embrace the new ways too. So it's a good combination, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. And in the old Ozarks, we just have a couple minutes before a break, but I think you can answer this one. There was kind of, you said, an ingrained belief in many of the older generations that magic and witchcraft were always associated with the forces of evil.
Right.
And that magic was also referred to malign, supernatural work is powered by witches and, you know, we were bad. And that, as you said, it has changed a bit. So is it, I mean, do some still hang on to the theory that all witches are dark and evil?
Yeah, so it's really interesting to look at, because traditionally in the Ozarks, the witch was almost a supernatural figure.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, they, you know, actual people sadly were accused and ostracized and removed mm-hmm. from the community and things like that especially yeah. in the Ozarks, that definitely happened. But for a lot of magical practitioners, the witch was a figure that, you know, could go invisible and invade your dreams and lived in these swamps and on these mountains. They sort of were these fairy tale creatures.
Mm-hmm.
What really was so detrimental to traditional culture in the Ozarks wasn't the stereotypical fairy tale witch. What was really harmful was, you know, the 80s and 90s, the satanic panic.
Uh-huh.
That was what really changed a lot of rural Ozark culture, because traditionally healers could still practice behind the guise of piety. But with the satanic panic, you know, everybody was targeted. And so you had, I've talked to church ladies who, you know, prayed and healed using Bible verses, who were very nearly run out of their church because of what they were doing. And so that sort of panic was much more detrimental than the old stereotypes of the witch.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for most people today, I've even encountered in rural areas, a lot of people are reclaiming the term witch, to the point where it's losing a lot of those negative stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
So people can jokingly refer to, you know, the local healer as the village witch, or
mm-hmm.
the local witch, or a witch woman, things like that. And there's no real risk of the same sort of ostracization and outcast and all of that, like we used to have. So I'm happy to say that it is changing, but you know, the panic that satanic panic, it does pop up still, especially in rural areas.
Yeah, it does.
A friend sent me an article a few months back about a local church who was fighting against a pagan organization in a rural Arkansas town.
Mm-hmm.
And so stuff like that always pops up.
Yeah.
But I think, at least amongst the healers that I've met, even the ones in very conservative communities, there's this comfort that they feel that, at least, you know, amongst their friends and things like that, they're seen as vital part of the community and not outcasts.
Not somebody that's going to eat their children. That's good. Good to know.
Right.
all right. So we're going to take a quick break, give everybody a couple minutes to rest their ears, and we'll be back with Brandon and more Ozark folk healing and magic in a couple of minutes. So just stay tuned.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages. From Haunted Road Media comes an exciting new novel by author Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Two lost souls, ripped apart by murder in another century, find each other again in the present, only to discover that the murderer has followed them through time. Can their love save them, or will history repeat itself? Find out in this captivating new novel by Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Available now on Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. Well, now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening in to Stirring the Cauldron. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up, if you don't already know, about the free weekly Witches Oracle Deck readings that I post on my website every Monday. Now, let me answer the age-old question before you ask it, which is, well, how do I know it's for me? And the answer is pretty simple. If you weren't meant to see it, you wouldn't know it was there. So if you're curious about what the week has in store for you, pop on over to marlabrooks.com every Monday and scroll down on the homepage, and there it will be.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Tonight we're talking to Ozark folk healing and magic author, Brandon Weston. And I'm going to say this again. The book is so fascinating. I've got so many things I want to talk about, and the hour goes by way too quickly. But anyway, all right, I'm going to throw another question at you. I was reading about the Ozark theory of illness and found it interesting that, as we were talking before, it's divided by source, not by where it sits in the body. So that's, right. Again, kind of want to talk about it. So some things that are considered to be physical may just totally be medical, and I mean spiritual or mentally things. How do you determine? I mean, because you I'm sure you're not using X-ray machines and CAT scans and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So how do you determine whether something is actually a physical problem or, you know, maybe a fear problem, anxiety problem or something?
Mm-hmm. Well, traditionally the process was you first sought physical cures before you sought magical cures. And so typically what people would do was they would turn to home remedies. They would turn to the yarb doctor, the granny woman, to provide herbal remedies or, you know, these other physical sort of medicines. It was only when the illness persisted after. So, you know, even though I'm drinking this tea to lower my fever just keeps going, or it gets getting worse. And so then maybe stronger medicines would be used. But, you know, magical illnesses are really defined in the Ozarks by their persistence. They just, you know, sort of stick with you. And so then somebody who knows about magical illnesses might be consulted. And typically, traditionally in the Ozarks, they would use divination methods. So they may use dowsing rods or a pendulum to locate certain illness in the body. And they would use very specific wording with their questions. So they would ask questions like, where is the magical illness in this body, or something like that. And if no magical illness is there, the divination method won't respond. And so, and there's tons of these sort of divinatory diagnosis methods. Sometimes people use fire or smoke, observing certain signs in smoke and flames next to a patient, or they may look through, you know, in one case, the healer looked through this blue glass bottle. And he would hold a candle out next to the patient, and he would run it from head to toe while looking through this blue glass bottle filled with spring water. And he would observe the way the light moved. And if the light became dim in a certain place, there was a blockage, or there was some evil or hex sitting there. And then if it spread out, you know, that place was clear. And so these divination methods would point to certain magical illnesses, and then, you know, magical remedies would come after that, rituals, prayers, things like that to address those illnesses. Today, I work in a little bit different way. I always recommend, you know, if somebody comes to me needing healing, I always recommend they seek medical attention first, but I'm happy to, you know, perform a ritual for them or help them sort of, you know, concoct their own ritual to engage with their healing process. So for me, I deal mostly with the strange things, the fear, the anxieties, the, you know, people that are, you know, haunted or
cursed.
I don't know how many haunted barns I've been to, things like that. And so that's kind of where I find myself fitting in as that sort of the spooky specialist, you know, where, you know, once all of the physical stuff has maybe been ruled out, then, you know, we can talk about maybe how to address it in a little bit different way. But I find part of my role is really aligning with modern medical techniques as well. And I think that's a really important area. It's actually foundational within Ozark healing. Ozarkers have always kind of had this fear of modern medicine, but they've also been very quick to adopt certain medical practices as a part of their own, because again, if it works, it works. So I one of my favorite healers, she had a thriving business, and all she did was people would bring her prescription medicines and she would pray over them. And so she would, and that's what she did. She blessed them, and then people were reporting that they only had to take it for a certain amount of time and they were healed and all of this other stuff. But I say that, you know, that's all she did, but that's such a profound thing to do, to both accept that people need medications sometimes and procedures, but then also realize that, hey, I have this gift, and why not use it to help people alongside of this other? So traditionally, yeah, the medical process was start with the physical stuff, and then if the illness persisted, seek a magical cure. And of course, at the end of that, if the magical cure doesn't work, typically people wouldn't go back to the physical cures. They would repeat magical cures, or they would go deeper with magical cures to the point where there are some rituals for removing very persistent curses that involve, you know, burying a person overnight and then giving them a new name, giving them new clothes, moving out of town, things like that.
Hiding from the spooks. Okay.
Yeah. Which can be, very powerful. But I think, yeah, I've never had to bury anyone like that.
Luckily,
but, but yeah, there's a lot of those. And I think traditionally the thought behind it was, you know, you start with the simple stuff and then go deeper as needed.
Yeah. Well, there was a question in the chat room that came in that addresses kind of this. She wants to know at what point do they consider calling in a doctor? I guess a regular practitioner.
I think most people would start with that today. I think one of the things that I observed as I kind of traveled around was that, sadly, a lot of the healers, you know, they don't have as many clients as they once did, which, you know, for the people that I've talked to, it's like, if you have a gift, you know, the people that need you will find you. And that kind of is what I heard across the board. But most people today will start with the doctor. And then if things, you know, get spooky or intense, then they may seek somebody who knows things. And that's kind of been the situation for quite some time since, you know, pharmacies and country doctors came in, you know, the mid to late 1800s, more and more people had access to medicine. So people would usually start with the country doctor or the pharmacist or the local herbalist. And then if they needed to, they would seek somebody who knew things.
All right. So, as you said, herbs and plants are playing a pretty big generally part in the healing process, and that's in part two of the book, All the Good Plant Stuff. And you list many of them, along with uses, cautions, preparations, medicinal things, magical things, and each one, this is really very cool, each one at the end of whatever you're talking about has a try it out thing, which, depending on the ingredient, can show you how to make yourself something to ingest to clear up a medical issue, like making a garlic oxymel, if I'm pronouncing that right, which is a powerful remedy to clear out sinus congestion. Or in the case of peppers, you can create a spray to make a hot pepper fence to spray around and to protect your home from evil influences. And, I mean, you do the same. Also, the try it out for tools and magical supplies and things like making a bag of nails. And before I go any further, what do you do with a bag of nails?
A bag of nails. So is that in the nails section?
I think so, yeah.
So typically house charm bags, so protective bags that will help keep out illness and evil and things like that. They use certain symbolic objects to sympathetically connect the object to whatever purpose you're aiming at. So you can take nails, and usually everything usually comes in sacred numbers, so 3, 7, 12, things like that. So the most basic protective bag for your home can just be a little drawstring cloth bag with 3 new nails, 3 new needles, and 3 thorns. And it's usually thorns from the honey locust, which grows here in the Ozarks. They produce these massive thorns that healers have used for a long time. But basically what you're connecting to is the symbolic power of these sharp objects. And what do you want them to do? You want them to trip up evil. You want them to, you know, you want sickness and evil to step on them and get, you know, hurt and run away. So at its most basic level, you know, connecting symbolically to these objects, a bag of nails, you can, you know, hang up as a protective fence. People have also used lengths of greenbrier vine, which has these thorns on it, or even metal barbed wire. Cut pieces of these and hang them above your doors to create this sort of symbolic fence to keep out evil, so that it, you know, if it tries to pass, it's going to get caught up in the nails, or it's going to get caught up in these briars.
That's pretty much like witches' bottles that we make with the sharp objects. Yeah. And we either bury them under the hearth or somewhere, you know, where nobody's going to see it. And I'm still laughing to this day because when I left my house and moved on, I left a witch's bottle in the front yard buried. And I can just imagine when the landscaper came in and, you know, saw that. Yeah, that would be a little scary. But then I also left a gate with a big pentagram on it, too, so maybe they could figure it out. I actually think they have the church come and bless the property. I really do. But, yeah, so a lot of your practices are very similar in nature to some of ours. And, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Because a lot of the ancient influences, you know, we might have branched off at some point, but we kind of have common ancestors in a lot of these practices. In the Ozarks, we don't really have the bottles. Most people use bags, or they'll fold up objects in pieces of paper. But a lot of houses, cabins have been renovated, and people have found these charm bags in the walls, you know, plastered over in the walls and things like that. So we also, we have our traditions of, we usually hang them up near, on the inside of the house, near the front door and the back door. It's just to create that sort of fence, but people also throw them in the attic, they throw them in the basements, they bury them, you know, under foundations, they put them in the walls, all sorts of stuff.
And the good news is nails are cheap, and so are bags. You can make your own bag, so I think that works out pretty well. We just came into spring, sort of, and you mentioned, and see, this is what's so good about your book, that try it out thing. Is something that you don't have to go to an occult store to get the ingredients or, you know, be a scholar to do the incantations or whatever, you know, whatever you're doing. So that is really good. So you mentioned, you're talking about a spring tonic in the book, and I haven't heard that phrase in a really long time, and it's always a catchphrase. It really didn't mean much, right? So for those who may not be familiar with that, what is the purpose of a spring tonic, and is it the same tonic for everyone, or do people differ from person to person and get different ingredients in their tonic?
Well, so our Ozark famous tonic isn't, I mean, it's Ozark, but it's Appalachian, really, but it's sassafras tea. Mm. And so traditionally, Ozark people would always make a big batch of sassafras tea for everyone. Usually, you know, it was family would come over and you'd make a big cauldron full of sassafras tea and everyone would drink some. Usually people would take them home, but tonics are really meant to tonify certain places in the body. Mm-hmm. And sassafras is specifically associated with the liver, which is connected to the blood. It's connected to the digestive system. It all goes back to the humoral system, which made its way into Ozark folk healing. I've met traditional healers that knew nothing about medical procedures, but they could tell you everything about the four humors. Mm-hmm. And so people still heal using the humoral system today. And so sassafras, is considered, it goes by a lot of different sort of terms. It's a blood thinner. It's it'll clean the blood. It'll clear the blood. And all of this is these are very nice euphemisms for it being a laxative. Mm. And so that's the point of spring tonics, is to get your digestive system running after winter. And especially for hill folk, what were hill folk eating during the winter? They were eating salted or canned meat. They were eating very little grains or vegetables, apart from what they could have canned, during the autumn. Mm-hmm. And so really, I can only imagine how their digestive systems would have been going into spring. And so you see a lot of these spring tonics. They were also called liver tonics, things like that, but really they were acting upon the digestive system. So sassafras is a mild laxative. It's not, it's not going to make you, run to the bathroom or anything like that, but it was just a way to get the system running again going into spring. But we also have other ones. Dandelion root was traditionally used, and it's a diuretic, again, to flush out the body system. Also burdock root, another diuretic, and also early spring greens. So wild greens like dandelion greens, poke salad is a big thing in the Ozarks, and poke is a mild laxative. It's a really iron-rich leafy green that will, help get your system back up and running. spring tonics were very, very important and still are. People still love drinking sassafras tea. It's a ritual that I've kept from my family. And so I actually just last week made a big batch of sassafras tea and drank it. So it's all a part of these sort of springtime cleansing rituals. Mm-hmm. So often the internal cleanses with the tonics were paired with external cleanses, like going to the cold river and at dawn and taking three plunges under the water as a cleansing ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So springtime is really the good time to do all of these sort of rebirthing rituals, renewal rituals.
Yeah. And here's something interesting, too, I found out. You don't follow the Hippocratic Oath. There is an Ozark Healer's Oath, and it is harm none, heal all who ask for healing, take no money, and don't cross other healers. It's short and sweet, and that's really good common sense. And do you think that Ozark healing is pretty much based on, is a tradition that's pretty much based on common sense?
It really is. The origins of a lot of our healing practices were based in necessity. It was based in, I am alone with my family on this mountain. What am I going to do if my kids get sick? Or what am I going to do if I cut myself or hurt myself? And so a lot of it is really based in this deep sense of simplicity. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those foundational things I always like to talk about, is this idea of simplicity. So you use what's at hand. You use what you can gather on the land, what you can grow, what you can repurpose from inside your house. Mm-hmm. You don't spend money on a lot of fancy tools, things like that.
Yeah.
Ozark people are so creative. The ingenuity of Ozarkers is just, fantastic, especially when it comes to rituals and magic practices. I've seen people work wonders with just a little bit of string and some knots, things like that. And so there is this idea of common sense, this idea of simplicity, this idea of what is, saying what you need to say with two words rather than four. Mm-hmm. I met a healer one time and she gave me the probably the best piece of advice as a fellow healer. She sat me down and I was talking to her about ritual objects because she had this set of spoons with crosses burned on them that she used to stir medicines. Mm-hmm. And so she sat me down and she said, as a healer, you should be able to do everything you need to do in a completely empty prison cell. And that has always stuck with me, this idea that the power, at least from an Ozark perspective, is in me, it's in you,
yes.
It's in the individual, and connecting to certain magical correspondences, to tools, to the moon phases, to the zodiac. That is all adding energy, this natural power to the spell. But at the most basic level, it's you and your magic. And that's all you need.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish my magic would stretch this hour out, but it's not going to. So there's so much more, you know, I said this three times. There's so much more I wanted to talk about, but perhaps you need to come back. And
yeah, I would love to.
Maybe even to talk about more of the try it out things, because that's really good interactive stuff and people can do it and get some idea about it. But for right now, I want you to give out your website so people can find out more about you and your books and your events and your services and whatever else you have up there.
Yeah, sure. So my website is ozarkhealing.com. I also have a Facebook page, Ozark Healing Traditions, and an Instagram account at Ozark Healing Traditions. I do online virtual workshops and lectures, and those are all posted on my website. I also offer remote and in-person healing, and so those are also offered on my website if anyone's interested in contacting about that.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I mean, this is fantastic, and I really got my nose in the book, and I had to pull it away to get other things done. And so I'm going to put my nose back in it tomorrow, probably. And I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight as well. And we're off. So until next time, everybody, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.